Now, many of us have kind of craved a bit of time away from it all, maybe not necessarily to a fancy hotel or resort, maybe just alone in nature, but somewhere where you can just kind of go and have a bit of peace. That's exactly what happened to Luke Goss, and he went off, in fact, to the Joshua Tree Desert in Southern California. No intention of writing a book about it. It did turn into a book, though, and I'm delighted to welcome Luke to the show. Good morning, Luke.
Hey, Bill, how are you, mate?
Good. I've got to tell you, it's very funny. When I first of all saw the front cover of your book, I actually misread it, and I thought it said dessert conversation, and you turned into some kind of pastry chef.
Well, you never know, man. I've tried most... I've made my hand at most things. You know, maybe pastry's my next stop.
Luke Goss and his famous panna cotta. I can just see it now. It'd be wonderful.
I can. I know. You would sell millions and millions of them, I'm sure of it.
Now, this is an interesting thing to do. I mean, just kind of head off into the desert. Why the Joshua Tree Desert? Obviously, it's famous for the U2 album, but that, I guess that's not why you went there, in case you bumped into Bono.
Well, no, you have to live in hope, though. You know, maybe he'll be hanging out there at some point. But, no, you know what it is? It's super close to where I live. I live in Los Angeles, so yeah. It's a two-hour drive away. And there's a great little place called Lazy Sky that has there's these teepees and these other little kind of tents and stuff, and this yurts and stuff like that. So I was thinking, okay, I'm going to try and find a weekend or a 4 or 5 day period where there's nobody there. And I found that little window, and I went there. There was no other guests, and I was just out in the desert. And I love it out there. It's just something about it feels super clean. I know maybe I sound like a bit of a hippie, but it's spiritually super clean out there for me.
Yeah.
And I've just been followed for 8 months with 2, 3, 4 cameras a day for the documentary, and then obviously the shows, and then filming. I just needed some quiet, and it was gorgeous. And then, like you say, I wrote a book, and that was not planned, but I was really just writing down thoughts. And then a publisher, Teddy, loved it and said we should put this out. And I said, okay,
fantastic. So
that was it.
So, yeah. Desert Conversation is not the book; it's Desert Conversation. And tell us what kind of subject. Although it still has a ring to it. I've got to say, I'm starting to bang on about it. What kind of subjects? What subjects did you kind of think about while you were there? Then, it's not a hippie thing. I mean, you were basically there to do exactly what you did, which is to kind of forget about your real world and to kind of head off into inside your head.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as I get older, solitude is something that I find really, really powerful in my life. With meditation every single day, I've not missed a day in three and a half years now, and it's just
brilliant.
Something that allows me, a connection to source energy and myself, and just to make sure that judgments about myself as a man, I always say try and be a man first, and all the other stuff follows. Like my professional careers in music or film are a blessing, but you don't really feel truly satisfied unless you understand who's enjoying that experience. So I was thinking, the book, it covers subjects like, for example, I think social media has become, is a fun thing. It has its place, but I think we've grabbed hold of it so feverishly that we've stopped interacting. And I know more lonely friends now, lonely people. I have more messages. The loneliness that's kind of somewhat camouflaged by this somewhat the presentation of this, something we're suggesting that we're not perfect, and we're all perfect in our imperfect way. And I just wanted to write a book about civility and manners and interaction and all that stuff, and faith, and a bunch of stuff that cropped up in my own mind while I was out there. And then I guess it's a little scary putting those kind of that amount of intimacy out there, but I thought it's all healthy stuff. So But why not?
Well, I guess if anybody's qualified to do it, you are. I mean, you guys, back in the 80s, went from press darlings to doing that thing that the British press always seem to do, which is really irritating, is turning on people that are successful who are from Britain.
I know. I over the years, I've got used to the whole kind of, formula. And it is that, like you said, and it's a shame, actually. But, of course, privately, I would be lovely to have been embraced as any British celebrity out there, could, not by the public, but it's funny how the voice piece for the public, which is the media, isn't always very supportive of its own. And I think maybe that's a shame. But, there's nothing we can do about it. It's been that way for a long time. But I certainly have stopped taking it personally, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm sure you're bored with talking about that time, but it was a particularly meteoric rise, and you guys, although you did have some amazing times, I'm sure you must have been going through hell, checking hotel rooms for hidden cameras and receiving death threats and all the rest of it. That's the ugly side of stardom, isn't it?
I don't know why. I think some people deal with it better than others. I always found it fairly easy to deal with, just because I never really took it that personally. I didn't wake up some morning and think, wow, I must be really hot now, because I wasn't yesterday. And I thought, but then, you know, but at the same time, playing music live is a lot of fun. That's not the challenging side. It's almost an isolating experience through schedule, through people's somewhat intimidation of you at times. Even family gets a little weirded out by it, and so it disrupts the kind of normal flow of things. And you learn eventually, or hopefully, that it's your responsibility as a celebrity to put people at ease and say, "Hey, look, I get it, but let's just go and have a beer, or let's just keep it simple." But it's a learning curve. You don't know, you know, the day before you're not famous, and then you are, and it takes a minute just to work it all out. And I think, say with this book, it was a case to stay firmly tethered to reality and firmly tethered to, you know, simplistic things that are very nourishing. And really, the book is, if I'm honest, it's about trying to say to people, one, anyone out there who's feeling lonely or lost or missing certain interactions, this book is just to say, hey, I'm with you. There's two of us at least, and maybe more. It's one of those little modest books that really is just to find an ear or two that might think, hey, it's nice to know there's someone out there also that feels a little sad about some of the things we don't do anymore, you know, civility and interaction.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Thing. I mean, at the time, I guess you were kind of lucky in that you had your brother Matt, because, you know, you're brothers, and that's a lot more of a bond, obviously, than just being with somebody who happens to be in the band with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, live music, you're seeing the whites of the eyes of the audience, and it's beautiful, it's passionate, it's sexy, it's fun, it's goofy, it's all of it. And then, as a filmmaker, I make movies, and you see, obviously, there's a premiere, or there's a junket, you talk to the press, but you don't see people unless you're in the bloody market.
Yeah.
So it's a very isolating thing. So, yes, it was more of a giggle doing the band. For sure, doing the shows recently last year in London was, again, it was a pinch yourself moment, because it is such a spectacular thing to do. You know, playing, you know, I don't know, 22,000 people a night. It's a lot of noise and a lot of fun. And to be honest with you, to have that back in my life is, I feel like a kid in a candy store again. Get to play drums again and to play it better than I did in the day is a joy, I've got to be honest, man.
We were just talking there that we have a mutual friend, Pete Kirtley, who is a producer and writer like me, and we had number ones at the same time in the UK, bizarrely, and won Ivan Avello's at the same time.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Hang on. You cannot throw away that comment and Ivan Avello. That's a serious achievement.
Well, it is. I appreciate it. But Pete beat me to it.
I will do it for you. Congratulations.
That's very sweet. Thank you, Luke. That's very sweet of you. But the point I was going to make is that when you did your comeback at the O2 last year, my friend Pete, who became your second drummer for that event, I didn't even know he was that good a drummer, but it turned out that he was.
He's a percussionist.
Yeah, he was posting pictures on his Facebook on a daily basis of the kind of the rehearsals and the actual event itself, and it just looks scary and amazingly exciting in equal measure to be looking out at that many people.
I have to be honest with you, I always get less scared when there's that many people opposed to 100 people staring at you, like, impress me. I'm like, oh my God. Like, when there's 22,000 people, you know, it's really about, you have to just get on with it, because, you know, it's a big deal, you know. And also, the whole thing was filmed on, we filmed it on 40 cameras, so we're going to be releasing that. But then there's also, the documentary comes out very, very, very soon, and that was in itself a terrifying experience. And Peter, who you mentioned, is probably one of my best friends in the world.
Brilliant.
Did make the documentary. And I have a nickname for him. Can I share it with you?
Yeah, go on.
Publicly.
Yeah.
I call him Fat Clooney, meaning Fat Clooney, because he's like an overweight George Clooney. He's not actually overweight. He's not as svelte as Mr. Clooney. But so his nickname, when we're drumming, I call him, hey, Fat Clooney, what do you think of this groove? But just when you see him next, give him a hard time.
Oh, well, indeed. In fact, he's coming to Spain this summer, so I'll definitely give him a hard time about that. You mentioned film there, and, you know, film crews following you around, all the rest of it. You've been on the other side of the camera. You've been in all kinds of movies, and in fact, you've done directing yourself. It always strikes me that as someone who's produced records, directing a movie is a very torturous process that must be so anal and takes forever compared to making records.
You can't actually compare it. I mean, to be honest with you, music is a beautiful addition and an amazing assistant to the narrative of film. So without music, film would be a different experience. But film is, you know, obviously you're not only covering a scene at a time, you're covering that scene at a time at multiple angles, and then you have to piece that coverage together. Then you have to do sound design, then special effects sounds, and then you have to put music to complement all that, and then color correction. And it's a lot of work. And I was the writer, producer, director, and lead actor in that, my first one. So I didn't have anyone else to blame. Wow. Let's put it that way. So, but people seem to be digging it. So I'm happy. I'm going to do another one, I hope. So
fantastic.
We'll see.
And what about the music for the future? I mean, you've done the big gigs at the O2. Is that the end of it, or will you be doing more?
No, absolutely. We're doing. I mean, we wanted to reignite Bross as a live band because we've got fans. Obviously, hopefully, ignite the planet again as far as the fans are around the world. We're definitely going to keep that going live. And, you know, never say never as far as music. If we find something happening and a demand where people are going to want to see us more often, then of course we'll make some cool new music. But at the moment, the live experience is the reason we do it, because we can. You know, we play completely live, no track, no tape, 100% live, and it's liberating. And in the early days, it was you know, being surrounded by these adults in suits, you know, waving their fingers, and didn't feel so beautiful. But now it feels like a joy to be a part of that experience. Just as making, I've got, you know, 3 or 4 movies coming out this year as well, so I just feel incredibly blessed at this time. For
fabulous.
Sure.
What would you think would happen, Luke, if you had started right now with the kind of X Factor generation that we now have, and the way music has changed so dramatically in the last even 5 years? Is it something you'd like to now be part of from scratch, or is it a little more scary and difficult now?
To be honest with you, my friend, I mean, I've been in the industry for 30 years, and I think it's a privileged position to be in and having that support for that long. I think the corporate interaction, and I think certainly the ones that we hear about, there's a huge input from management and corporate side of things. I think if I was to start from scratch now, I'd be probably scratching a living and playing gigs somewhere, because I want to be a musician. I wouldn't want to be anything else. So yeah, I'm very thankful that I've got a 30-year legacy behind me that could at least allow me to be, you know, walking into the O2 after 25-plus years you'd have to be a little lost and not realize that that's truly a blessing. You know, that's an amazing experience. Yeah. So to be able to just go do it like that is... Next time we do it, you've got to come along, bro.
I absolutely love to. It's been brilliant to talk to you. The book is A Desert Conversation, and you can get that book on Talk Radio Europe's website. I'm going to say it wrong all the time now.
I think you're going to keep mentioning a souffle or something.
Well, I bet you get it wrong in an interview that you'll no doubt do from this point, and there'll be many of them. I bet you call your own book Desert Conversation at some point now.
it was certainly crossed my mind.
I've got to ask you. I've been desperate to ask you this, Luke, and we've not crossed paths. And I'd love to ask. I've been asked to ask you this question. I just had this vision of you boys back in the day having an entire warehouse full of like empty bottles of Grolsch from all the Grolsch bottle top. Were you ever sent Grolsch by the company as a kind of thank you for revitalizing their beer?
And Levi too, by the way. No to both.
Oh, what a shame! What a shame!
It was a really good excuse to crack a cold one, so I'm all right about it.
Fair play to you. Well, it's been brilliant to talk to you, Luke. Really appreciate your time today. I know you're a busy man. Thanks ever so much, and we'll talk again soon.
You too, sir.
All righty. Cheers. Bye bye.